Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hey, thank you for coming back and watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Today we are going to be reviewing the film Visiting Hours. Michael Ironside, William Shatner, and Lee Grant. Let's have a look at the trailer.
When was the last time you sat in a movie theater and felt the cold fingers of fear creeping up your back? 20th Century Fox presents a movie so intense, so frightening, you may never recover. Visiting Hours, starring Lee Grant, William Shatner, Linda Pearl. Rated R.
And welcome back. We just got done seeing Visiting Hours.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
So is this your first time seeing it?
Yeah, I've never seen this one before.
Which is
interesting. I've seen it in a lot of the other work of the director, but not this one.
As we went through the list and you were picking a whole bunch of really heavy stuff and we said, hey, let's just get a fun slasher flick for you to just kind of turn your brain off and chill. Little did you know, there's going to be some commentary in this.
You said, what about Visiting Hours? And I went, sure. So I feel like I've been set up.
The movie starts out with Lee Grant interviewing a lawyer who had prosecuted a woman who had been attacked by her husband. Mm-hmm. And so it very clearly, straight out of the gate, sets boundaries of the, hey, I'm kind of on the female activist side, while he is very dismissive. He is very, well, you know, after she shot him, she probably just threw herself down the stairs so she'd get all covered in bruises and stuff. Mm-hmm.
She's a feminist drawn in broad strokes, which to me is the writer didn't want to dive too much into the feminist movement, you know, just enough to propel his story.
Yeah.
And you also see that with her treatment by her default romantic interest, played by William Shatner. And the fact that he is clearly, you know, at one point telling her that I can't air that segment you did. It was too rough on the prosecutor. Hey, by the way, do you want to go get dinner?
He was very dismissive of her, too. She's like, hey, I think I saw this guy in the operating room and, you know, I need to get the hell out of here. And he's like, no, don't worry about it. They got great security here. There's people outside the front door. There's somebody right outside your room door. So he's very, very dismissive.
Yeah, really just short of, don't you worry your pretty little head.
And then meanwhile, you have Michael Ironside, who his father was strongly abusive.
But this is also shown, this is not his first victim. It's established pretty early on that this guy is a serial killer.
Yeah.
And that he, and also one thing I noted is when you look at the pictures of his past victims, he tends to target older women.
The one older woman victim that we see on screen was an accident, but he didn't necessarily have that, oh shit, this is the wrong room, I gotta go. It's pretty much a, oh, hey, I'm in the room, she's an old lady. It's a victim opportunity. What the hell? I'll care.
Yeah. This also was the year after Scanners. So Michael Ironside had already kind of burst onto the horror scene.
But it was still early in his career.
Oh, this is basically his second major acting credit. So, and again, it's just that, wow, this is not the Michael Ironside I'm used to. He doesn't talk very much.
Which I think, personally, I look at that as a disservice. The people who made this film said, oh, let's use Michael Ironside. We just finished making Scanners, and he was great in that. And the one thing that made him great in Scanners,
that fucking voice.
His, how he delivers dialogue.
Yeah.
And he's minimal, hardly any dialogue out of him in this movie at all.
Yeah. It's, and it may be the one of the behind the scenes trivia is like the first day or two of shooting, Michael Ironside broke his ankle. So part of his lack of energy and the lack of the normal, what we expect from Michael Ironside, is he was probably on painkillers to get through scenes.
But even with the handicapping that Michael Ironside has throughout this and the lack of dialogue, we can all agree he is still fucking creepy.
Oh, it's still Michael Ironside.
Yeah.
You know, he is easily the best thing in this movie.
Far and away the MVP.
It's not a horror movie, but it's also not a traditional slasher film because there's no obscuring of his identity. We see him from the get-go, and we follow his backstory as much as we're following Deborah's. So he gets a lot of screen time.
And there's a lot of depth to his background. It doesn't necessarily take pains to excuse what he's doing, but it does explain his psychosis and where it comes from. Mm-hmm. Throughout the movie, we get a series of flashbacks of young Michael Ironside interacting with his father.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys, during those scenes, get a sense of inappropriateness from the father?
Oh, yeah. Especially the second scene with he was wrestling around with his son. There was certainly a vibe of it. Because anytime you see him interacting with his son, he's pinning him down, but they're both giggling.
There's one scene where he's pouring beer on him.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you want a drink? Here, drink some of this.
The only other time we see him is when he's assaulting his wife, where she has to defend herself. And the only thing she has nearby is some
oil.
Yeah, which you never explain why she's boiling oil. But hey, there's oil. It's boiling. I'm going to use it to defend myself. And we get budget Two-Face. I think the other thing I found interesting in this movie is, because, you know, when you're establishing your cast, you also have the young nurse who is brought in, who is Deborah's primary caregiver. And this is played by Linda Pearl. And she's, you know, first off, when she's introduced, one of the first things I noted is in a slasher film, you would be our final girl. And here it is. They show her as a fairly dedicated nurse. She's a mother with two kids. In one scene in the movie, she talks about that she had her kids young, that she had a husband, but he is not present anywhere in the film. Anyway, she's set up, and all of her setup says, okay, final girl, but she does turn out to become a secondary fixation of our killer.
I really loved that one scene where she's on the phone talking to the folks at home saying, hey, I'm going to be late for dinner. And, you know, I'm keeping an eye on the newswoman. And you see Michael Ironside in the background just kind of standing there lurking. He's out of focus, but you can tell it's him. And then he just kind of walks off. And I thought that was really nicely done.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with her home life because she has two kids. And then there's another woman in the house. They never clearly establish. I suppose there are meant to be hints that she's like a nanny.
She does ask, hey, can you mind babysitting my kids tomorrow night?
And she says, I'm glad you're going to stay around for another couple of days. So she says things that establish it might be something like that.
I instantly said, are they in a lesbian relationship?
Here's what I would say about that, if we're looking through the modern eye. And that is, it's a lesbian-coded relationship. We're still talking 83, presenting a heroic character as overtly lesbian would be something that this... Let's put it this way. That would have got it on the Nasties list.
If anybody had noticed.
Back in the day, if it had been overt. And so I think what happened is what you saw a lot in that era where the writer... I really want to present them as a couple. I can't get away with it. So I'm going to code them lesbian, but leave out so people go, oh, okay, well, maybe not. I mean, even if she's still a visiting friend, way some of the scenes play, they could still be in a relationship. And you know, no mention of where the husband was, and it doesn't really matter. He's not important to our story.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting take that it's just presented that here's these two women that may or may not be lesbian, and they just kind of don't comment on it. They don't bring attention to it. They just kind of there and move on with the story.
It's just an interesting introduction for another character And where she would play in a normal slasher narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, our middle-aged character is, in fact, our main protagonist.
With your Friday the 13th and your other movies of that ilk, all the kids are teenagers. All of the, you know, you get dumb kids with some occasional chaperones. Here, they're all middle-aged. They're all older. Michael Ironside's probably the youngest of the bunch.
Well, I would say Linda Pearl, maybe.
Okay, Linda.
But even then, she's a mother of two kids, so she's not that young. In a responsible
position.
Yeah.
So it takes that whole stupid teenagers doing stupid thing theme and just spins it on its ear entirely.
There's certain scenes or just certain shots, the way they're framed, like there was more idea going on and they just didn't follow through on it. Like when Sheila at the end of the film is on the gurney and she's got that mouthpiece in, which is for...
Oh, the breathing tube thing.
Yeah. Sheila's the nurse. I don't think we named her earlier.
I got this impression that there was just something, there was more there, and they didn't do it. Something ended up on the cutting room floor.
Or like, why are there dogs in the hospital basement?
That was an odd moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that literally was just there for a jump scare.
Or bits like, where did Michael Ironside get the keys to run the elevator when Linda is trying to get away?
Yeah, and you're right. It could be on the cutting room floor. Although, again, I think this movie could have stood a little bit more cutting.
Yeah.
But the other thing I think that's interesting. So we're talking about this other character, the woman that Colt Ironside's character picks up at the diner, and I guess part of me is like, okay, so where are we going with this, Colt? This is a woman who doesn't fit your victim profile. You're bringing her back to your home, where you live, and was your plan to assault her all along? Is this how you think dates work?
He pretty much just holds her down, gets the knife out, strokes it up and down her body, pops her shirt off.
Although discretion, we never see, there's no nudity in this movie. So, we know what happened because we also meet her later and she survives. That's the other thing. He doesn't kill her.
And she's all beaten up and she's got like a black eye and, you know, you see her back and she's got like scars on her back.
That to me is like, okay, so she doesn't meet your kill profile. Were you so dismissive of her? You didn't think there'd be repercussions for doing this to her, which interestingly, surprise, spoiler, there are.
Because where does he do everything to her at? In his home, house. Where he lives. And she goes back. How did she put it? Yeah, I mean, a couple of friends went back.
And redecorated
his apartment. They did a good job.
So, but there is a repercussion of that because while she's messing it up, she finds his kill shrine.
Yeah.
His death mask on the wall of all the pictures that he's taken of all his victims and cut them out and built basically a skull on the wall out of them. I gotta give mad props. Okay, the movie has its issues, not a problem. But like some of the scenes, like the old lady being killed, were really, really effective.
This is a lot of really talented people made this movie. This just really isn't necessarily the best example of any of their work.
It's semi-early in the screenwriter's career.
Because he had a pretty good career after this too, didn't he?
Yeah, the items of note are Poltergeist 3 and Omen 4. He wrote those, but he also did writing for the original V TV series. Earlier in his career, he was writing for Emergency and Adam 12.
Yeah.
So but a lot of the films he did do were all television movies, and they were all thrillers.
No, but because she finds the shrine, that lead her to going to the nurse who she'd already met. And it does lead to an escalation of events. And that's really what's going on. We have an escalation of events where another reason why this doesn't fit as a slasher movie, even though the events are escalating, it's putting increased pressure on the killer. You know, he is determined to kill this woman, but every time things go wrong for him, it gets a little harder for him to get to her.
The movie was clever in places like where him having to get back into the hospital where, okay, he starts out with just kind of doing disguises and, like, puts on glasses and, like, wears ambulance drivers' uniforms and stuff. But then at the very end of the movie where they've locked the hospital down really tight and there's nobody getting in or out without, like, checks and, like, IDs and stuff. So what he does is that he pops a whole bunch of pills, shoots some beer, and then, like, takes the beer bottle and slams his forearm into it and just, like, gashes the hell out of his forearm so that the ambulance comes and they take him right past the security into the hospital. I thought that was really clever.
No, that, again, it was, there are great ideas in this movie. And that was another thing I want to point out for really well done. In a paying attention to some details, you know, the first time Colt attacks Deborah, he does injure her enough.
Yeah, a couple of times.
A couple of times. Enough so that she's taken to the hospital. And they even say, oh, you know, she's going to need surgery. I think it was to repair her arm.
Yeah.
So there is a scene where she goes into surgery and she is convinced that Colt has snuck into the operating theater.
Because he has this bell around his neck, that just a little gold bell that just dingles a little bit. And he heard it. She heard it in the initial attack, and she hears it when he's stalking the halls.
And so she thinks she hears it in the theater, and there's a doctor, the anesthesiologist, who looks a lot like him. So she's panicking, and the way they film that scene is showing all of the doctors and nurses in a very ominous light. And I felt from just how that scene was shot, that was incredibly well done. And really built the sense of dread. And I love how they finally relieved the tension by simply showing what she was actually hearing, which they show what it is and they show why she could mistake it for Colt's bell. So that was well done. So yeah, there's great bits in this movie.
There's a couple of things that I found myself looking at and wanting more background on because it seemed really kind of really super vague. All right. One of his victims, it's the guy with the mustache.
Oh, Vinny.
Vinny. He talks a lot, but he hasn't really interjected himself in any way other than he's been maybe annoying.
Also the only male victim.
And really one that Ironside wasn't setting out to kill. It was just kind of a, I need to silence you here and now because you're making noise and the cops are going to be coming. So he does it as a moment of opportunity, not an intended murder.
It's still too vague because all he has to do is just step out of the room.
Well, I think that also,
nothing.
I think in the end, that's another one of those. There are a lot of little moments in this movie where, well, if a hospital is on lockdown, they wouldn't do this. Police in the middle of an investigation, if somebody's coming to them really in a concerned voice, almost hysterical, they're not just going to go, lady, shut up. So there are, I think this is just another of those inconsistencies.
Yeah,
I mean, it just happens to be on the killer's part instead of a person in authority.
The only counter that I would have for that would be that if we start applying logic to horror and thrillers in general, a lot of movies start to fall apart. So, okay, we probably don't want to pull on that thread, even though it is a flaw.
Okay, that's a good counterpoint, but there is a wealth of really good horror films where there's no thread to pull.
Again, I'm just going to go with, this is a flaw that existed throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It's not just that one kill that has that kind of flaw. There are several flaws like that where and it came down to either narrative convenience. We have to have this thing happen. Otherwise, there's no way the killer will get to her and we can't have our thrilling scene. In this case, I think somebody went, can we kill somebody other than a woman?
Could be.
And that's what I think it ultimately comes down to. It's the biggest weak point in this movie is a lot of narrative causality that just doesn't bear a lot of scrutiny just because the writer was just like, ah, fuck it, move forward.
I can't argue with that. I mean, yeah, the writing does have some issues. I guess my tolerance for it is a little bit better, so I was able to kind of, and move on. Speaking of how well-constructed the movie was, here's something that doesn't get a lot of love occasionally. I loved the Foley work in this movie. Like, they had that one scene where the young nurse is like looking at the kids and she's like running around the house with a knife and she puts the knife on the shelf. And it's just, and when she grabs it, there's this kind of big, thick, metallic swing as she pulls it off the shelf. Or like when Ironside is pulling the curtains down looking for Grant at the end of the movie, and it just says "bing" as he rips him down. Really nice sounding.
You know, that's actually a good point, because I remember thinking, especially in the pulling down the curtain scene, of there was the attention to detail on the sound. There's also little uses of sound. I mean, the doll that would cry if its binky came out, which actually comes around to being Chekhov's doll later in the movie. And I'll give you that. You know, so I'll give. I think there was some really interesting use of camera work, switching between some camera styles that I felt were appropriate. Most of the time it was standard TV camera angles, camera movements.
Very flat.
And then every once in a while, if something changed in the movie, because I noticed in the scene where the nurse is getting the call from her house that hints her that her kids might be in danger, the camera work shifts from that smooth to almost a handheld feel. And that there's a shot when Deborah's in the basement trying to evade Colt that to help give a sense of claustrophobia, it switches to a POV shot.
Yeah. Or there's moments like, so we see Ironside preparing to go into the hospital for a second time. It's like, God damn it, I gotta go kill her. And so he gets this placard that he puts on the side of his van that says florist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then he gets in and drives off, and the sinister music's starting to swell. And then it immediately cuts to her hospital room, and this stranger you only see from about the shoulder down, carrying flowers, walking up in, and the sinister music is going. And you're saying, oh, this is going to be it. And then it pans up, oh, no, it's just the chat. And I thought that was really well constructed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Again, you know, for as much as I've been dragging on things in this movie, there are some great elements in it. There's a reason why this wasn't a career ender for anyone. It's, you know, these are people that went on to have really good careers in Hollywood and or in the Canadian film industry, which, let's face it,
Ontario.
You know, well, they probably went a lot well Vancouver now, but still. Yeah, no, those were some great and effective scenes. That's why this isn't a movie I dislike. It's got those elements. It's just, it needed a little bit more to get into the more, this was a well-remembered film.
I think the most effective and most memorable thing that if you go to any horror fan and you show them the trailer, they'll say, yes, I remember that trailer. They'll never remember the movie.
And I think the other thing that's going to come is with that trailer, people are going to look at it, see a young Michael Ironside, and immediately, you know, key in on Scanners.
So, you got anything else left you guys got to say?
No.
The only other thing I would say with this film is that because it was awash in the era of a lot of knockoff slasher films, I think it just sort of falls in there in that a lot of movies, I almost think it could be a case of, well, okay, the script was written, and as Ian said, this is a thriller, and somebody went, oh, well, but we need to punch it up with some elements from slasher films, because those are big now.
Because kids love those.
Yeah, so I think some of the other incongruities could come to the fact of you had and again, the story's decent. You know, you had a decent story, but somebody decided, well, we need to make this more like a slasher film because it'll be easier to market. And once you get that kind of executive meddling going on, it can have an unintended domino effect throughout the rest of the production.
So was Visiting Hours nasty?
No. No, it wasn't.
No.
No. It was, I'm sitting here going, literally trying to pick the moment, because there's always that, that got it on the nasty list. The closest is the rape scene. And even then, I'm like, if so, what are we stretching for here? This was...
The knife up the bare leg and across her crotch was very phallic and almost kind of that knife foreplay.
That is literally the get the craps past the censor type move. Thus, not something designed to keep you off of a list, not get on it.
The other thing that we might be overlooking is that Halloween 2 came out at more or less the same time with more or less the same themes and setting. So maybe they saw that and said, well, if that's horrific, then obviously this one is horrific too.
The trailer for the film plays a lot like a slasher film. And then when you watch the film, that trailer where the skull slowly comes into picture with the lights turning out on the office building, that trailer really sends it up as, okay, this is going to be a film. And it's not.
All right. Acquitted. Not on the list. Do you like visiting hours?
Do we have a rating that can be the equivalent of meh? I think part of the reason I give it meh, this is a movie where a better editor probably could have saved it.
I think if we had gotten rid of about 10 or 15 minutes and made it just a nice solid hour and a half, it would have been a much tighter movie. It would have been a much more solid movie.
Because I even remember thinking, this scene's going on long. So yeah, a tighter editing would have helped. I have no problem with any of the performances. They're all good actors.
I really dug it. I thought that it was really creative. I thought that the acting was stellar all around. Even the bit supporting parts were pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it, it's not a masterpiece of the genre, but it was entertaining enough for the runtime.
I went into this with a lot of expectations. And I'm just like, this is a television movie.
Yeah.
This was really actually a theatrical release, really?
It had television music, it had television pacing, it had television lighting. Here's the thing, there are a lot of great creators in this movie. I mean, we all agree Michael Ironside is a great actor. We all love Michael Ironside. This was the least Michael Ironside-y performance I've ever seen Michael Ironside give.
All right, I dug it. Meh. It wasn't completely without entertainment value for me.
So, yeah. See if you can find a graphic.
We can, not a problem. Yeah. All right, well, that sounds like an episode then, doesn't it?
As you leave the theater, folks, please be careful. Don't let this happen to your car. Be sure to remove the speaker before you leave. If you should accidentally pull a speaker loose, please turn it in at our snack bar or box office. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Hope you enjoyed that. Please click like and subscribe. If you have anything to say, please write it down below in the comments, or you can email us at thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And as per usual, stay evil.
Christ, you really blast them all, don't you? Blacks, Jews, Mexicans. You want the whole goddamn world to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like that.